Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock. Your friends in horror since 2013, though the days are starting to blur together a bit. And I am Johnny Numb, and joining me as always this evening is...
Billy Crash.
Absolutely. How you doing, Billy?
Oh, I'm doing as well as anybody can be doing, I guess, in this forced staycation.
There you go. And tonight we are going to take the edge off a bit, or are we?
Dun 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 dun.
Yeah, suspenseful music. By doing another in our long-running series of episodes, our hodgepodge of horror, and this is number 14. Billy informed me before we started recording.
It's crazy, man. Crazy.
Yeah, and you know, it's fun. I enjoy these episodes because, you know, to those who might be tuning in for the first time, first of all, hello and thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Billy and I pick a couple movies we've seen recently, but we don't tell each other what they are, so it's a surprise on both ends when we bring up the movies we're going to talk about. So. And it really is that simple. So, So Billy, would you like to get us started with something you've seen recently?
Yes, I do. Because it's so bizarre, and it was funny. I was talking to Greg Palko of Palko Designs on Twitter about the show, and we said exactly the same thing about this movie. And it frightened me because it was almost word for word throughout the entire length of the film. And it was really intriguing. Mm-hmm. And this was one that was getting some buzz. And I hate to use that word, but it exists. And I watched it and I was like, why? And it's like after I saw it, the buzz just went bloop and died. And it is Travis Stevens' Girl on the Third Floor.
Oh, okay. I have not seen it yet, but that I've heard of it for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it was written by Trent Haga, Paul Johnstone, and Ben Parker, and maybe this comes into where the problems lie.
Mm.
And the cinematographer was Scott Thiel, and it stars CM Punk, who was great in it.
Yeah.
Trieste Kelly Dunn, and I think they're introducing Sarah Brooks or no, Lisa Dowling they introduced, but sorry, I was interrupted.
It's okay,
what
Bill.
The fuck. God damn. But the thing was, it started out with great. It had this great opening. It had it was the cinematography was beautiful. The story was cool. CM Punk was cool. You know, this was great. It was gelling. And the last 15, 20 minutes, it's as if everybody associated with the movie behind the scenes left. Mm-hmm. New people came in and dumbed it down, shot it differently, came up with this third-rate, bizarro, stupid fucking ending. And destroyed everything that had come before it.
Ooh.
It was just really bizarre. And it's strange because I'm looking and none of the players have changed.
Hmm.
Travis Stevens also had his fingers in the writing of it. So that's four writers that we know of.
Oh, wow.
That's not a good sign.
No.
But the music was by Steve Albini.
What?
Yeah, music by Steve Albini along with Allison Chesley and Tim Midyet. But I saw Steve Albini, and I'm like, holy shit, you know? And
frickin' Big Black and Shellac, yeah.
All of that stuff. And I'm like, wow. And the story's cool, and it's dark and weird, and then it just got dumb. Really dumb. And it looked, the whole quality of it degraded rapidly within those last 15, 20 minutes. It could, maybe they ran out of money. And it's like, we got to wrap this up quick. But they couldn't have because of the way they film certain things. And I'm like, what happened?
Wow.
Because the beginning had really cool shots. It was beautiful. It was atmospheric, and he just blew it. They totally blew it.
You know, Bill, that's, you know, I do seem to be hearing kind of divisive things about that movie. Like, people either really like it or they really don't like it, or they think it's kind of like what you were saying, that it kind of dropped the ball at some point. Yep. You know, I'm a fan of Trent Haga because he's, you know, he's been a writer for many years. Like, he wrote Dead Girl, which we both love.
Mm-hmm.
And he did 68 Kill recently, which I liked a lot, a couple years ago.
I don't think I saw that one yet.
I did a review of it for the site.
Right, so. I remember.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. It's not like a full-on horror, but it has horror elements to it, and it's got the lovely Sheila Vand, who I know you like.
Ooh. All right, I gotta see it.
But is this kind of like one of those films, Bill, where was it kind of being mysterious, and
yes,
they kind of explained it away, or they did a bad job of explaining the mystery away at the end without saying too much?
Yeah, it was like a bad giveaway at the end, but the thing was, it felt different. The tone changed,
mm-hmm.
the look changed, the feel, all of
wow.
it. And it
wow.
was like the way it was shot, I'm like, what are they doing now? It's not right. It's And Palko was saying the same things. He's like, what happened at the end? Like, everything changed. Like we're talking personnel. It seemed like it was a different writer, director, cinematographer, mm-hmm. all of it.
Wow.
And it was like this, and it just went into this. I just became super stupid.
Like, it spiraled, kind of.
Like, but it was instantaneous. It was like walking between rooms.
Ooh,
you know, it was okay. Like walking into from one room into another, and you're in a different universe. And it was like, what the hell just happened? And it wasn't fun, and it wasn't cool. It was, you know, it was jarring and stupid. It wasn't jarring and cool, you know?
Yeah, you know, Bill, sometimes when I'm watching a movie and I'm really digging it, there's like always kind of this feeling in the back of my head of it's been so good for so long.
Yes.
If they don't stick the landing, it's going to totally make it terrible.
Yeah.
And I hate when that happens because you do wonder, like you're saying, like what happened to that? It led to this, you know,
exactly. I have no clue what went wrong, but something clearly went wrong.
Yeah. It sounds like some behind the scenes, stories would be interesting to hear on that one.
I know, but I'm at the point where I don't care anymore. Like, you guys screwed it up. Go to hell.
Yeah, I guess they're not going to do like a documentary on what went wrong with Girl on the Third Floor like they did with Richard Stanley's Lost Soul.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
What
well,
about
you, know,
Johnny?
Well, you know what, Bill? I know you've seen this one, so why don't I bring it up? This one has gotten a similar, maybe a little more hype than The Girl on the Third Floor. It's on Netflix streaming right now, and I knew I had to see this, not because the people I know who are into horror kept saying good things about it, but because my supervisor at work kept saying, "Oh, you got to see this," and she won't let me rest in peace until I actually see it, so I can tell her what I thought about it. So, and that film is the Spanish production, The Platform.
Ah,
and I know you've seen this one, Bill.
Yes, I have. I'm interested in hearing what you have to say.
Yeah, I just watched it over the weekend. It's directed by probably pronouncing it wrong, Galder Gastelu Yoroshia. Oh my god. Domo Origato. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, man, you did a better job than me.
And it's, well, I'm not going to say it anymore, but it was written by Pedro Rivero and David De Sola. Those are easier to pronounce.
Yep.
And it's basically a very simple plot, mm-hmm. and I like that when it's done well, and I do think this film does it well. It's basically two people wake up they're on this, they're in this square enclosure, and there's a hole, big wide hole, rectangular, I would say, in the middle. Mm-hmm. And what our protagonist, played by Ivan Massagay, quickly discovers is that there's a platform that comes down, and there's basically a banquet feast on this platform for people to eat from on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
However, this platform is housed within this... We learn it's a pretty absurd number of levels. The platform descends from level zero at the very top and makes the descent all the way down to the very bottom. And what happens is very interesting.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, why don't you say something about it, Bill?
No, I think it's cool because depending on the level you're on, that dictates what kind of food you're going to get, because all the food is prepared in special fashion. Mm-hmm. On this platform. It's laid out en masse.
Yep.
And it goes down from floor to floor. So if you're on level one, you get first pick.
Yep.
And you could stuff your face like a maniac. Second floor, you know, and it goes on and on. But as it goes to the lower depths, there might not be any food at all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And how are you going to survive? Because every 30 days, you're going to smell the gas, you're going to pass out, you're going to wake up on a different level. So you could go from level one month, and then the next month you're at level 200 and you're like, oh crap, there's no food. What do you do?
Yeah, it's definitely one of those social experiment style films that,
yeah.
You know, it reminded me a little of Romero, you know, how people behave when they're in these kind of stressful situations, and mm-hmm. exceptional situations, like think of Dawn of the Dead with the good people inside the mall, and then you have the bikers coming from outside kind of trying to get a piece of something.
Right.
So it reminded me a little of that. It also reminded me of Saw a bit, in terms mm-hmm. of kind of a bit of its live or die, make your choice a doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
I think this
Cube,
film
even.
Yeah, no, and that's what I was going to say, like the abstraction of Cube kind of.
Yeah.
Even though this, unlike Cube, this is basically the same setup every floor you're on. You know, it's just the person you're with changes, and what it's interesting because each person is allowed to bring a personal item from their
yeah, that was so cool.
That was an interesting touch, I think, you know, and
yep.
to see what people are actually taking with them to keep on their person during this time, and how the functionality of that stuff changes mm-hmm. between people as the film goes on, and as the characters kind of as our protagonist kind of he goes from sort of this I would almost say he's kind of more idealistic, you know? It's like, well, people do the right thing, kind of, and then he goes... you know, it is like one of those Romero-esque characters who's like, you know, people will do the right thing, and then you're kind of beaten down by the fact that, no, they're gonna go apeshit on that table full of food, regardless of where they are, and it's every person for themselves, so...
Yeah.
But there's a lot of interesting social threads going through the film, and people are saying like it's like a very timely film considering where we're at with like COVID-19 and certain mm-hmm. other aspects of the American experience. And I think it's interesting that a Spanish film is kind of telling us kind of about where we're at as a society in this country. So.
Yeah, and it's funny how low it goes and what that indicates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah, this won 3 Goya Awards, which is equivalent of 3 Oscars. So, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it's the director's first film.
Yes, I heard that as well.
Holy fuck. Like, how? Like, what did you do to, like, get this gig, man?
Yeah, who saw your 2-minute short film and decided,
Yeah.
you know?
He had two short films, and they're all far apart. One was 2004, one was 2011, and then he did this. And then he had been a producer from 2003 to 2016.
Oh, okay. All right.
And he even produced a short called She's Lost Control, which my guess is a take on the Joy Division song. So you know
Oh,
his
yeah.
cool factor is through the roof.
Right.
But yeah, and it was, yeah, that movie was just like ripping your guts out watching it.
Yeah, it was pretty intense,
And
and
it
I
got
was.
dark, man.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I'm not gonna give
No.
away much more detail about it because, I think I've been burned by certain Netflix movies.
Haven't we all?
And I'm sure you can speak to that more than I can, Bill, but
Probably.
yeah, but I'm like to watch this and be really impressed with it. It was a treat to see something that good as a quote unquote Netflix original. So if you haven't checked it out yet, yeah, by all means do so and let us know what you think. Bill, I want to talk with you about a potential error in physics after the show in
Ooh,
the movie.
cool. Yeah, let's do that.
It constitutes spoilers, so I don't want to talk about it here.
Understood. I know there was a we could go in a lot of different directions with this, but we can't.
Yeah, that could be its own show, honestly, but we will digress. Yeah.
Yes, and because we're in Spain right now, let's just travel south and go to Malta in the center of the Mediterranean, shan't we?
Shan't we?
Shan't we? Because I've only seen two Maltese produced films, and this was a great find on I think it was Netflix. I hope I got it right. Called The Boat,
Oh.
and interesting because like it because it's like I kept bypassing it because this is the blurb that they have. A solo sailor is locked inside the head of a sailboat, which is under steam on autopilot. And I'm like, well, come on, you know? And it's more of a mystery thriller, but it does fit into the horror category for many things. And it's directed by Winston Azapardi. He co-wrote it with, I believe it's his brother Joe, and Joe stars in it, and that's it.
Oh.
That is friggin' it. And has music by Lachlan Anderson, who did a phenomenal job. Cinematography by Marek Truskowski, which is also great. And this movie is really cool. And it was reminiscent in many ways to the movie Triangle, to a degree, the horror movie Triangle from
Okay.
2009. In fact, he gets on a sailboat, and the boat is the same name, the Aeolus, you know, Sisyphus's father. You know, the guy who pushes a rock up a hill over and over and over again. And it's a cool story. You could tell that these guys know their boats. You could tell that Joe, as a party, is definitely a sailor. He really knows his shit. And it was one of the first times I saw a boat-based movie where they really knew what they were doing with a boat, and they got sounds right, and some really cool, intriguing things that were going on. And I'm like, I'm watching this movie, and I'm like, how's this going to entertain me for 90 minutes? And then it's like, oh, it's over. You know, it's just like one of those. So I really enjoyed it. You know, this man, he gets on this boat, he's stuck, and he's facing the other, for sure. He's definitely facing the uncanny. So to me, you gotta have those two elements that equals horror. And it's his journey trying to answer the question, what the fuck? You know, and they do some really cool stuff in here, and I'm like, they're really ruining these boats. And I was like, shit. They did some really cool stuff, and stuff that actually made me cringe because, you know, I had been in the Coast Guard and I'd been on small boats, and I've been on small boats when you're next to those 10-story high monster barges that carry the world to you. And it's like, holy crap, man. You know, and that's like, so I was feeling that again watching this. and that was great. I would have been dead within 5 minutes watching this movie, like, because I'm not a sailor. I don't know how to run a sailboat. Luckily, this guy, you know, kept his wits about him, and well, does he survive or not? I don't know, but it was interest. It was an interesting film, and he did some really cool stuff with it. Came out of nowhere. I was very impressed by it. Not perfect, but I want to see more from these guys.
Yeah, Bill. It sounds like there was a kind of a claustrophobia to this film based on the premise of it.
Yeah, it was definitely that, and the whole, you know, the isolation. Yet also the beauty of it is, he's isolated, yet he's in the vastness of the ocean, and it's like you can't see land, you can't touch anything. They did some things in here that were really neat. I don't want to talk about them because I want people, if they want to see it, I want them to be surprised by it. But
sure.
But it was one of those things. It was like the best part of Jeepers Creepers 2, where the kids are stuck on the bus, and we got to get out of this bus, and they get out of the bus into the open field, and they're just as exposed. And I love that dichotomy. And that was the same with this. He's like, I'm on this boat. It's a small boat. I'm in the middle of nowhere. How do I get back home? What the hell's going on? Where am I? Nothing. You know, it's like, you know. They did some really cool stuff in there that I appreciated. Great mystery thriller. And I would say it's definitely horror because, you know, the uncanny element and this element of the other.
And you said that's a Netflix bill?
Yeah, one man show. Joe has a party. You know, I watched it with Cheryl, actually, and it was a work night, and I'm staying up late because I can. She gets up early to work out, and she just sat there the whole time and just, like, watched it. She was like, holy crap, it's, like, almost midnight, and she was all pissed, but, you know, and she loved it, too, and she was like, wow, he's really good looking. So, there you go, Joe. Joe and Winston, man, I want to see more stuff from these guys because they were just fucking, it was just great. I was just really impressed by what they did. I've seen so much crap, and this was not crap.
I will check that one out. I'm very curious now because I don't know anything about it outside of what you just said. So
yeah, it's from 2019. It's not Das Boot or Das Boot from 1981.
I still have to see Das Boot.
Oh, Johnny, what the fuck?
I know. Maybe I'll catch up with that while I'm not able to do much of anything else. So.
Johnny,
I know. Well, Bill, I'm going to go mainstream for a second here.
Oh, you whore!
it's as mainstream as I'm going to get tonight, actually. But this is significant because it's one of the last movies I saw theatrically before the theaters closed down. I took in an evening show of Lee Whannell's The Invisible Man.
Uh-huh.
which now you can, through the miracle of, you know, smart televisions, you can pay $20 to watch, which doesn't seem like quite a deal unless you've got like about four or five people gathered around the TV. But in any case, Bill, I never thought I would say this, but I feel like Lee Whannell could be a potential successor to David Cronenberg based on this movie.
Holy shit, really?
Did you see Upgrade?
Yes, I did.
I think this and Upgrade kind of have me thinking like, yeah, he's got a little skin in the body horror game, so to speak.
Wow.
And the thing about this movie, because I'd heard a lot of positive things about it, but I was still sitting in the theater kind of skeptical because it's freaking Blumhouse. And, you know, you know, for every good thing they do, there's like five things that just seem reekingly cynical, you know, and cash grabby to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I genuinely love this movie.
Wow.
It's a very interesting take on the concept. Maybe because, and I mean, you can say what you will about the influx of hashtag MeToo content that's, you know, making its way into films in the wake of, you know, Harvey Weinstein and all that stuff. But this is a movie where it feels kind of natural and organic to the story. And I like that Lee Whannell, he flips the perspective. You know, we're used to, okay, we're following around the usually male scientist who's discovered how to turn himself invisible, and that's the movie. Whereas here, we're following the victim of the guy who's learned to turn himself invisible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting flip of perspective. And I like that we're seeing it from the survivor's point of view, quote unquote, seeing. And Elizabeth Moss is fantastic. It's mostly a one woman show.
Huh.
She pretty much dominates the movie. There's some good supporting characters as well that complement her quite a bit. And then there's some villainous characters who are a nice contrast to that. But I was just really taken with it, surprisingly so. I think maybe because, you know, the whole effort to get Tom Cruise's The Mummy to resurrect, you know, the Universal monsters, the Dracula Untold, and the Benicio del Toro Wolfman from years ago that wasn't very good. I think there's a bit of hesitancy on my end to kind of look at this and think, oh, well, the notion that it could possibly be good doesn't really enter my mind. So I guess it was kind of nice that I was sitting there and, without knowing much about it, it really took me on a ride, and a really well done ride at that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really pleased with the film, and yeah, Elizabeth Moss is great. The special effects work is actually really kind of a bit more spare than you might think. It's actually pretty fantastic, and there's some wonderful suspenseful set pieces scattered throughout. So I think it really does what it intended to do really well, and I was pleased and surprised by that. So I don't know if it's worth the $20 for a single watch on Vudu, but maybe once it comes out on disc and you order it through your friendly boutique company, because Amazon's not shipping that stuff right now, you might want to give it a spin, or Netflix it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, my endorsement of The Invisible Man. So
wow.
Yeah.
I like it.
All right. Yeah.
Excellent. I'll keep my eye out, although I won't see him go by. But anyway, this is a movie, another one I had passed over a million times, and I got a call from Palco, and he's like, Billy, you need to watch that movie. And I'm like, okay. It's an interesting film, because it came out in 2017, but it was filmed in 2002.
Oh. Hmm.
Yeah, it took a long damn time. And it's called The Evil Within.
Hmm.
And it was written and directed by the late Andrew Getty. The film came out 2 years after his death.
Wow.
And it apparently was a labor of love. There is a behind-the-scenes documentary on this movie that I haven't seen yet, and I think that's what got Palco interested in the film.
Mm.
And it stars Sean Patrick Flannery.
Okay.
The always lovely and vivacious Dina Meyer.
Ah.
And the guy who steals the movie, owns it, runs with it, phenomenal, Frederick Kohler.
Hmm.
And you're like, who's Frederick Kohler? And if this movie had come out in 2002, 2003, maybe you'd know him a little bit more. He's been in over 90 films. He was on the Marissa Romanoff TV series in 2019. Okay. He's been on video games, you know, voice and such. And he has... let's see, a couple of movies coming out, Pursued. But he's like playing these bit parts, and he should not be. He is brilliant in this. Michael Berryman is also in it, and he's fantastic. And this movie is not perfect in any way, shape, or form. But if you're looking at a movie, I think the budget was finally $6 million.
Mm-hmm.
They had like budgeting issues. They had... I could tell there was a lot of concerns, because as the credits rolled, normally you have like one gaffer on a film, you know, one grip, you know, so like an electrician, this and that. Well, he had like, you know, 10 different grips, 10 different gaffers. And I'm like, what the fuck? He had like 4 different assistant directors. You only need one. What's going on? So this went through like some sort of crazy process over time. And finally it was made. The guy died. 3 people actually associated with the film died, and the movie's in memory of all 3 of them. This is so insane. And it's, let's see, I'm going to read it. Okay, this is, no, I don't even want to say the blurb, because the blurb gives away too much.
Okay.
But it has to do with this young man who is, just watch it. I don't even want to tell you any more than that. This young man, played by Frederick Kohler, who's plays Dennis Peterson. There's a couple of things they didn't hear that are like that are really amazing, and there's some story things that in here that are like story wise they don't really work. Mm-hmm. But and I'm wondering if they lost footage, or they couldn't film that, or if Dina Meyer finally said, fuck you, I'm not coming back. I mean, I don't know. Maybe some things are missing and they couldn't include it. But it's pretty wild. They do some really cool things in there. For a low-budget, independent, nowhere film. I mean, this guy came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Getty. Did you ever hear of him before?
No, I mean, the only Gettys I know of are the rich ones, and Balthazar is one of them, so.
Yeah, this is the only thing he ever did, period. He wrote and directed, and he died, I think it was drug-related.
Oh.
At 47 in 2015.
Wow.
So I definitely want to see the behind the scenes, but I think everybody should watch the movie first.
Okay.
Because it's worthwhile. But I don't want to give anything away, so I'm not.
Well, you're selling it to me, Bill, by not saying anything about it.
And thanks to Palco for making sure I watched this thing.
Did he find the behind-the-scenes stuff like on YouTube or something?
Yeah,
like
yeah. I just haven't gotten to that yet.
Okay. Well, yeah, it sounds like the behind-the-scenes stuff is at least is it maybe more interesting than the film proper. So
yeah, the one producer is the one who edited and put it all together and finally released it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. 15 years in the making.
Labor of love, man.
Yeah, because I'm like, wow, Dina Meyer looks great. She hasn't aged at all. Yeah, because this was 15 years ago.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. I think of when Jim Bam Beber was working on the Manson family. I think he started shooting footage for that like in the late 80s or early 90s, and that film wasn't finished or released until 2003.
Oh my gosh, it's craziness, man.
Yeah, that commitment to your art, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Bill, I'm going to fly off the handle with something random, as is our intent here.
Mm-hmm. It's a hot
Bill, you remember years ago when I came up to your place in Easton and I brought to Extro on DVD?
Yes.
And we watched Extro together, and then we talked about it on one of our earlier Hodgepodge episodes, or I believe, yeah. So it was probably back in 2013 or 14. But, you know, for years, that DVD...
I know where you're going.
Yeah, the DVD came also with the sequel, Extro 2, The Second Encounter, which I had never watched before. So recently I was like, I'm going to sit down and finally watch this thing.
Oh, man.
So first thing... I remember this one. Yeah, because I loaned you the disc and you watched it too, I remember. But yeah, basically same director, but if you loved everything about Extro that made Extro Extro, you probably aren't going to like or be severely disappointed by Extro 2.
Yes.
I will say this about the film. It's basically an unabashed alien ripoff that, you know, was the type of thing that was popular in the 80s and early 90s.
Yep.
You know, it's not fun like the Roger Corman stuff, like Galaxy of think it was Galaxy of Terror and Forbidden World. Those are really good Alien ripoffs. But yeah, this thing is just, you were talking about the Girl on the Third Floor earlier, Bill.
Yep.
This is a film that has four credited writers.
Yeah.
And I believe the director, Harry Bromley Davenport, was doing stuff with the script too, probably as it went along. It is basically one of those people and films set in a scientific facility that looks kind of like a warehouse, and some alien creature comes through a portal, and we've got scientists and Marines sent in to try to contain the problem without incurring too much collateral damage. You know, Bill, I got to admit, I'm starting to form a soft spot for alien ripoffs. I don't know what your I don't know what your mileage is on that stuff. Like, how do you feel? Are you just like, I would just rather watch the real thing instead of this low budget crap kind of?
Or? I don't mind ripoffs if they're fun. This
okay.
wasn't fun though.
The editing is really inexplicable in this film. They're constantly cutting away to like bad computer graphics that
yes.
don't make any sense in relation to anything, even with the even when the characters are talking and like doing voiceover over what's ostensibly happening on the computer screen, you can't tell what's really going on still. No. The dialogue is just so much gobbledygook that after a while it's like you just give up on trying to follow it, basically, because it's just it makes no sense. And it's like the resort of the desperate writer to try and misdirect the audience. Like, oh, we're just gonna pummel them with all this crap and make them think we're smart. Well, yeah, that didn't work at all. It just seems desperate. Jan Michael Vincent's in it, and Harry Bromley Davenport in the interview on that DVD is yep. like he actually kind of mocks his work ethic, and he's like saying how he literally had to stand in position and recite the lines, and then Jan Michael Vincent had to recite them back like right after he did that. That's how he worked. And I'm like I don't get it.
Yeah, from everything I heard, he was a prick.
Yeah,
just a prick. And Davenport said it, you know, the movie he wanted to make Extra Wise is Extra 3. So
well, you know, and I think this is part of the reason I watched it, Bill, was because I think I've shared this with you. Mm-hmm. Vinegar Syndrome has yep. released Extra 3 on Blu-ray, and I got a copy sitting in my room right now, and I was like, I'd better not. Even though there's no continuity between these films, apparently, I'm just like, I can't watch Extra 3 without having watched Extra 2, just for my OCD mentality.
Yep.
So I was like, that's why I watched Extra 2. So now I can finally watch Extra 3, and I'll let you know how that one is.
Awesome, man.
Awesome. Hopefully it is better than Extra 2, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Oh, excellent.
Mm-hmm.
So what you got, man?
That's it? All right, cool. Then I'm going to go. Because I have two that are both better than expected movies for me. One I've avoided for... I'm going to tell you how long I've avoided for. I've avoided it for 11 years. Because I thought, it's just a piece of crap, hokey thing, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer's Body, 2009.
Oh, okay. All right.
Directed by Karen Kasama, written by Diablo Cody, who's my next wife. did I say that aloud? Did I say that publicly? Is this thing on?
She's probably listening, Bill, so you're good.
Awesome. Starring Megan Fox, Amanda Seyfried, and Adam Brody, Johnny Simmons, and the rest goes on. And the cool thing about this whole film that I really, really loved is... it goes to Diablo Cody, who was working against the typical archetypes that we see. Amanda Seyfried plays a geeky kid, but she's not picked on. She has a boyfriend, and she does get laid. And I was like, this is cool. Her best friend is Megan Fox's character, Jennifer, who's really hot. And she's friends with her. They're best friends. It's like, this is great. You know, I was like, I love this. So they kept playing with those dynamics, making, you know, just because the characters were multidimensional instead of locked into these bullshit categories that Hollywood creates, and they were outside of that, I really enjoyed the film. I really enjoyed it a lot. I gave it 4 damn stars. I thought, the dialogue was witty. I really enjoyed it. It was cool. It was fun. It was dark. Mm-hmm. It was almost like, you know, Joss Whedon, Buffy the Vampire Slayer-esque, the TV show, not the movie, in its feel, you know, with a different kind of Scooby gang. So I really appreciated it and enjoyed it and liked the... I liked where it went. I liked how, you know, they had this like comedy element to the dark, but the dark stayed there. You know, the dark didn't go away. It was like putting lipstick on a pig kind of thing. So I really enjoyed it. And that was a lot of fun. I just love working against the stereotype. So that was cool for me.
Yeah, you know, I know Movies, Films, and Flicks, I think, did an episode on it recently. Well, I know John Levengood was talking about it, MFF Horror Corner.
Yep.
And they were like, I think they were both like, yeah, we've always liked this movie. And it's they were kind of pushing on social media, kind of to, not pushing, but just kind of like saying, hey, yeah, you know, this movie's out there and it's, you know.
That's why I watched it.
Yeah, it's not as bad as people make it out to be. You know, I saw it in the theater and I didn't really get it, and then I watched it a couple years ago, and because I got an itch to watch it again, and I still kind of didn't get it. So maybe I'll need to revisit it at some point. The points you're making, Bill, are totally spot on about the characterizations and the relationships and everything. I think that is an interesting take on things, but I think my issue was more like, it didn't strike the balance between the dark and the comedy. It was trying to, it would lean into one hard and then lean into the other hard, and it kind of flip flopped. And I think that's where it lost me, for me anyway. That's how I processed it.
Hey, that's fine, man. That's fine. Just put the bottle down, Johnny. No, I'm playing. I hope you like it on a third watch.
Yeah, I'll probably revisit it at some point. Because it's like, I think it's because I really want to like it. I've liked Karen Kusama's other stuff, and I think she's a really talented filmmaker. I will probably give it another shot at some point.
Cool.
Well, I'll mention this one, since we've hopped around with some things that are streaming on Netflix, and this one was kind of a gap in my viewing, and I kind of was kind of like a facepalm moment when I was like, yeah, this is on Netflix and I now have streaming again, so why haven't I not watched this yet? And it's I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House.
I almost watched it again last night for the fourth time.
Bill, I'm passing you the tissue box, okay?
Too late. I'm all goopy.
Gonna get a mop bucket out there, clean up on aisle 3.
Mm-hmm.
Written and directed by Oz Perkins, who you know I'm a huge fan of.
Who is it?
Yeah, I. You know what? If you're not a fan of Oz Perkins, you're not a friend of me. I don't mean that. we can still be friends. But yeah, this was just an interesting movie to me that sort of carries a lot of similar motifs that recur in his other work, like The Black Coat's Daughter and Gretel and Hansel. Mm-hmm. And I just really love how he encapsulates loneliness in movies.
Yeah.
It's a really simple story of a hospice worker played by the wonderful Ruth Wilson.
She's awesome.
She is, and she's assigned to take care of this aging elderly mystery writer played by Paula Prentice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically just her daily routine in this lonely house that looks kind of like a historical site, the way it's preserved.
Yeah.
It has a slightly artificial look to it, like a slightly renovated feel, not quite real. And I like that about it. but it's just these very subtle, odd things begin to occur. Perkins is just really good at manipulating darkness and using technique. There's a recurring image of a certain character who's seen like emerging out of darkness in a very interesting way, and the way that that character moves around is very otherworldly and ethereal, and I like that about it. Probably the one problem I have with the film, I think it's really good, but I felt like there were a few threads of character and story that might have been missing, or it didn't quite cohere as well as I wanted it to, but maybe that was the point on Perkins' end. What do you think, Bill?
I think you're right. I think that was by design.
Okay.
Because I really loved the film. I loved the imagery. Everything about it was just really cool. And it's one of those movies where I got sucked into the whole damn thing and really enjoyed it. I gave it 4 stars.
Yeah, I did too.
Awesome, man. Awesome.
But yeah, it's definitely... If you've already seen Oz Perkins' other work and you like it, and for some reason you haven't seen this one, by all means, check it out. Because it does, like you said, Bill, it does have this really hypnotic pull from the start. And some of that is the imagery, and some of that is the sound design. And it all commingles really beautifully, I think, while still being an effective and at times a suspenseful and frightening movie.
Yeah, definitely. I enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it.
Awesome.
Just has that he creates atmosphere, man, and just
he's like Robert Eggers, I think. They're like two directors who are fantastic at just creating a mood and an atmosphere. Yeah.
Can't argue that.
That goes a long way with me, so
well, this my last one is a movie I'm supposed to hate because it's, you know, kids in high school, someone finds something, and it's like, oh my God, guys, look what it does. Yeah, whatever, man. You know, and it's like, oh, I'm like, oh. But nothing was on. I couldn't find anything. So I put in this movie called Polaroid.
Oh.
Came out last year from Lars Klevberg, written by Blair Butler and starring Catherine Prescott. And Mitch Pileggi's in it from X-Files and all that fun stuff. Shocker. And this teenage girl comes across a Polaroid camera. And it's almost like an extended Twilight Zone episode. And, you know, Polaroid camera does certain things that aren't really great. And one thing I hate about movies like this is it's like somebody knows, oh my God, look what it did. I can't believe it. And it's fantastical and it's crazy. And you tell people and they're like, yeah, right, bullshit, man. You know, and it's like, oh, I hate that scene. Can we get through it real quick? And man, we got through it real quick. It was great. Because what I really loved was what Blair Butler did as a writer. And I think that's why I gave it 3.5 stars. I was really impressed with what Blair did in regards to... taking those elements where it's like we've been down this road before with this strange object that causes X, and it's like, oh, nobody believes them. But Blair made sure that, all right, this is, you know, this isn't the heart of the story, so we got to get on with the story, and these people need to be made aware right away. And that happens, and it was really cool. And what I love is this pisses me off with so many movies. And this is why I hate the Annabelle shit, all of the crap by fucking James Wan, because he's doing this commercial bullshit. they have like no rules to their own stories. And the rules aren't set. I just watched that stupid Curse of La Llorona, whatever the hell it is.
I haven't seen it.
Just don't do it. they have this cool looking dead wedding, dead bride thing, dead mom, you know, and these kids' lives are in danger. And when I always hate that crap, you know, because it's like, oh yeah, the kids are really going to get hurt. And they did have a couple of scares in it and all, but the rules were loose. This ghost can seemingly go everywhere and do everything. And then it's like they're telling her in the movie, oh, they're coming for your
your kids, but she already got to their kids, but she didn't do anything to them. What is she waiting for? And it's like, right. I hate that crap. In this movie, in Polaroid, Blair Butler, you could tell Blair had the, and I keep saying Blair because I don't know if male or female.
Sure.
I didn't look that up. And had the rules right in front. And it's like, this is the rules. This is how it works. This is how it doesn't work. And they stuck to that. Like, there were these little cute touches that I really, really enjoyed. These great little details that came through that I was that really impressed me, you know, because I try to be vigilant when I write and when I do a movie and all. And it was great to see somebody who was like, yeah, you know, like, this has to be this way. It cannot work any other way because these are the rules. And they didn't bend them. So it was great. I really enjoyed it. It was a PG-13 film, and I still had a good time.
Nice. So,
yeah, I was impressed by the writing. I want to see more from Blair Butler, and I'm going to find out right now. Male or female? She! Blair, okay. Thank you. Born in Kansas.
Bill, was this one a little bit like... it sounds a little bit like Butterfly Kisses. Am I off on that?
Yeah, you're off.
I am? Okay, all right.
Yeah, Blair Butler did a great job writing-wise. Awesome.
Yeah, because I think Butterfly Kisses did a good job of setting up rules and playing by them as well. So I'll have to check this one out. Yeah,
exactly. Those rules are important for any film, especially when it has some intricacy to it. Like the movie Triangle we were talking about in 2009, I just watched that again, and it was like, you know, what are the rules? I see there's one thing I have a point of concern about, but you and I can talk about it.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't watched that one in a while, but I will gladly discuss. Well, the last film I have tonight is shout out to DM Elms at Virago Ergo Sum on Twitter, because she came to me and said, oh my gosh, you got to see this movie. It's streaming on Amazon. What are you waiting for? You should have watched it already, kind of thing. So, so I actually, for a change, someone gave me a recommendation and I made a point to watch it. because I had like a weird, this was back when people were still allowed to travel and my significant other was out doing something for a couple of hours. So I had like the perfect slot of time in the afternoon to take advantage of this movie, which was, it's only 80 minutes long. So
I like it already.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to just slide it in. But yeah, it's this film called Savage Land from 2017. It's directed by Phil Guidry, Simon Herbert, and David Whalen, and it's written by Herbert and Guidry. This is a found footage film that is eerily keyed in to, let's say, current events in a way. Mm-hmm. I'm not referring to COVID-19, but go back a few years, and some of the things it addresses are very prescient now. And I was really taken aback from the start by this film because it's a really well-done found footage film. These, you know, as you know, Bill, these films can go one of two ways. And you know, and when they're not done well, they're painful to sit through. This film sort of takes the dive and really conveys a sense of verisimilitude in its approach. Yeah, and its approach to the characters and its approach to the people who are showing up for the interview segments to provide commentary, to even the way they use kind of a multimedia approach to outline certain things. Like there's a whole thing of the basic premise is one fateful night, the entire population of this small Texas town, I believe, is just totally wiped out. And the suspicion is that one man, who I believe is a migrant worker, is responsible for killing upwards of 40 or 50 people in this town. And that's the setup. And it is just beautifully done. And it just, the way it moves is just very, you're sitting there. I was sitting there with my jaw dropped watching this thing, because I was like, they are doing such a good job of hitting on these points without getting the sledgehammer out.
Exactly. Know? Exactly.
Did you see this, Bill?
Yeah, because when Dee speaks, I listen to her too, man. And
yeah, what did you think of this?
Oh, I enjoyed it very much. It was very visceral. It was very timely. It was very unsettling. It was a great mystery.
Yeah.
Mystery, crime, horror, all rolled up into one. It had like almost like a, it had a great, you know, it was a great mockumentary. It was an excellent mockumentary. It's I'd say it's up there with the best, you know, like Lake Mungo and such.
Poughkeepsie Tapes, yeah.
Poughkeepsie Tapes, yeah, all of that stuff. Mortal Remains, you know.
Just, oh yeah, good one, good one.
Yeah, definitely. So.
Yeah, so I really think people should check Savage Land out. Like, I watched it a month or two ago, and it was streaming on Prime. So if you have Prime and you're at home, like I know everybody is right now, I would give it a look. It's heavy stuff, but it's really compelling too.
Yeah, definitely. It was great. It was really, really well done.
Yeah. So.
So, man, that's our hodgepodge for this time around.
Yay!
This is our first hodgepodge show since June of last year.
Yeah, I know, it's been a while.
Yeah, so we need to do another one soon.
well, all I got is time to watch movies, Bill, so we could do one next time we get together for as much as I care. Yeah,
I'm wondering if we should do a show on, now that we see how this temporary apocalypse is going down, will this change anyone's writing when it comes to a dystopian future with a collapse? Or have we really seen what a collapse could be like? There's no riots yet, you know, the only thing, like, friggin' toilet paper, but, you know, like,
right.
It's not like people are fighting and dying in the streets, and that, you know, people are forming, you know, gun-toting families for, you know, protection or some shit, you know?
But, yeah, we're not at like, the Road Warrior or anything like that.
I have my outfit picked out.
Bill, are you going to be like Vernon Wells in The Road Warrior? No, you're going to be the Humongous Man. That's who you're going
to
be.
I am Humongous.
Just give walk away. Just walk away.
We've all lost loved ones, sir. Oh, my God. That movie was so great. I am Humongous. I'm like, yeah! Rocket!
Bill, you need to look up the GIF. Just look it up on Twitter or something. It's just type in The Road Warrior, or it's just the one of the Humongous like running towards the camera. It's just very surreal. Yeah.
Ooh, I like that.
But I could see you rocking that sort of, you know, that metal hockey mask sort of get up and leather get up. Yeah.
Dude, it was like an S&M movie, man.
Yeah. This is the future of the Outback. Yeah, apparently.
I wish I had the mohawk, though. I had the bike. But anyway, that's a whole other story. Anyway, we have scream outs.
Yeah.
And I'm screaming out, Johnny. I'm screaming out to these wonderful souls that you could find on Twitter. Give you their Twitter handle, tell you a little bit about them, and we move on. The first is Oscar and Jeeves.
Mm.
And she is an unknown compelling force. Flash nonfiction, trying to be a better human, but when I get passionate, I curse a lot. So she's amazing. And her puppy's cute as hell too. Aww. Midwest Crypt Keeper, and you can find him at Crypt Midwest. Lover of all things horror, Jason, Michael, and Freddy are my trinity of horror. And that's the man. He's really cool. Great guy. Mike nice. Morbid, and you can find him on Twitter as J Mike Morbid. The chronicles of a morbid trying to live in a mundane world, waiting to become a horror movie host, follows Welcome, now on Facebook too. And out of Canada. And you could find more about him on creepycineplex.freeforums.net. Jasmine St. Clair. Mm. Actress, ECW Wrestling, Outlaw, Rebel, Catalyst of Shock Culture, The Deuce, National Lampoon, Dorm Days 2, A Weird Kind of Fame. She's also on Facebook, and she is a citizen of the world. And you could find Jasmine St. Clair also on imdb.com. How about that?
Nice.
I had one I listed twice, but I'm skipping over and I'm moving on to Sahar_author. And who is that? That is Sahar Abdelaziz. She's an author, psychological, political thriller, satire, and nonfiction. She's published by Dajarabi K Pub, forgive me, and Limitless Books. Also go to shararaziz.com. I know Sahar. She's really amazing. She's wonderful. Phenomenal person, great writer, full of life and passion, and she's just awesome.
Nice.
So check out her stuff. Predator Hunter, who is that? Guyver One or Guyver I? That's an I. I'm looking at it. I know you're not. Action horror, sci-fi fan, part of the horror family, and who isn't horror fam? And he's in the jungles of Central America. Cine plus Mass SF, and that's SF. Cine, C-I-N-E, presenters of SFLFF taking place in September 2, 2020 out of San Francisco. And you could go to CineMass with two S's, F.org to get more. Gulia Childs, and I know you've seen her on Twitter. I love horror movies and food. I post a lot of amazing photos of food that inspire me in the kitchen. If you have horror-themed recipes, do share. And that's what she does show. Ghoul Scouts, how's that for a hashtag for her? She's out of LA. And also go to guliachilds.com. Two more. Angie Bulkley, former comedy critic, press photographer, horror ska, the Clash junkie. I mean, how could you not love her? I like to combine song lyrics with horror movie gifs, working on a horror novel called Malcolm. And the last one for tonight is LaBalana_T. She's part of the writing community. She's a horror lover, horror vendor, Buzzard View Manor on Facebook, co-host on podcast The Midnight Manor, horror podcast. Who listens to those?
Mistress, not me.
Yeah, not me. Screw that. Mistress to the Abandoned and Forgotten, and she is lost in Texas somewhere. So, LaBalana_T, whichever way you want to say it. That's what I hate about the writing thing. And it's like, there's a unique name and I've heard it said different ways and it's like, I'm screwed. So,
nah, anyway. It's not your fault, man. Yeah.
Yeah, it's my fault.
I was mispronouncing stuff earlier, so we're in the same boat.
Wouldn't it be funny if you got that guy's name right? And someone named Smith, it's like, it's Smithy. Thanks for ruining it, man. You piece of shit.
Yeah, I want the director of the platform to at me on Twitter saying, "Yeah, you said it right. Yeah, perfect the first time. Yeah,
that's not gonna happen.
First time it ever happened in my life. Yeah, yeah.
No, but that was awesome, man. Some cool movies. I hope people check them out, and I hope you avoid the ones that like Girl on a Third Floor. Like, what the hell happened with that, man?
Yeah, I was like, feel free to check out Extra 2, but you know, what I said, if you like Alien ripoffs, if you don't like Alien ripoffs, stay far away from that one.
Yeah, Extra's amazing, man. Extra's amazing.
Yeah, they keep getting good releases of that, like, in other countries, but not in the U.S., so.
Yeah, not yet, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I would love Vinegar Syndrome to put out a special edition of that one.
Mm-hmm. But, so there's our hint to them. And Rising Storm, Vinegar Syndrome. No. Rising Storm, a.k.a. Rebel Storm from the 80s. Sci-fi, adventure, mystery, and it's perfect, and comedy. And it's perfect for everything that's happening today. Find it. Put it on Blu-ray, please. I beg of you. I'll pay $50 for that thing.
How did you see that one, Bill? On video?
HBO, baby.
On HBO.
HBO,
okay.
In the 80s. And I watched it like a million times. Then I got the VHS, and that's the only thing I have. Never came out on DVD or any other format, was never streamed. And I'm like, this is so appropriate. It's a post-apocalyptic United States, and these two criminals are looking for, well, I won't tell you, but it's great. It is really, I thought it was really cool. I loved the hell out of it. The president is Jimmy Joe III. Yep, there we go. And it says a lot right there. And they're looking for a thing called the Constitution, Bill of Rights. What is that? That existed? What are we looking for?
I'm Nicolas Cage, and I stole the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. Yeah.
Oh, Nicolas Cage in Color Out of Space, man.
Oh, that's another one I saw recently.
Yeah, me too.
That was pretty wild, I thought.
It was pretty wild, but it felt like Poltergeist instead of something darker. You know what I'm saying?
No, I know what you're saying. And truth be told, I read the story a long time ago and I couldn't remember much of the story. So I'm like, yeah.
I wanted it darker, but
Yeah.
pink is fine. Dark
It's
pink's
about,
fine.
yeah, it's a fuchsia. Fuchsia, maybe.
Yeah. A little lavender. All right, we gotta go. Let's get out of here, man.
Well, Bill, do you want to say where people can find you?
Fuck. You can find me at Crash Palace on Twitter, CrashPalaceProductions.com to links to this show and more. And if you're into kink noir, my erotic crime horror series, Bloodletting and Punishment, is available on Amazon under my last name. P as in Papa, R as in Romeo, Y as in Yankee, S as in Sierra, T as in Tango, A as in Alpha, U as in Uniform, K as in Kilo. Go, Johnny.
You can find my writing at Crash Palace Productions, and you can also now find it at 1428elm.com.
Nice.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
That's awesome.
It's a happy marriage so far. So
Yeah, baby.
actually, I'm practicing polygamy because I'm married to you and I'm married to the 1420 Elm now. So
Whatever.
well, it's like Big Love, that Bill Paxton show. Anyway.
God. Miss Bill Paxton. Frailty, one of the greatest horror movies ever made.
He was just always nice to see in anything, but and you can also find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies, and that's it.
Game over, man. Say
Game
goodnight.
over.
Say goodnight, Johnny.
Good night, Johnny.